What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and I got wind. I have wonderful producers here at The Craft, and I got wind that someone put out another starting pitcher ranking. Now, I thought that was the only one. I thought literally there was no other ranking on the internet except what I do. But I heard that someone named Eno Saris, I'm sorry, my producer saying it's Saris.
No, no, your producer is wrong.
Who said that? Oh, it's Eno Saris. Just kidding. Eno Saris is here. I don't know why I keep doing this bit. Eno Saris, we're going to talk about your rankings today. Thank you so much for being here. What a wonderful guest you are.
Thanks for having me.
I love the fact that Kyle Bland made an Eno Saris Rex image. And if you guys want to ever see that, you can just send me a message
it's
on Twitter.
I will absolutely share
it with you. But we want to talk about Eno's rankings. And the reason I wanted to talk about specifically is because it does highlight some philosophy changes, or at least differences that you and I have that's extended past our 15-team versus 12-team favorite. And the very first one that I know that everyone is going to be curious about is after last week's amazing episode, by the way. I think that was one of the most entertaining ones we've done in a long time. Did you change your Max Meyer ranking or not, you know?
I forget where it was in the episode. I have it at 44. No.
I guess 45, and you're like, yeah, I'll move him up. One! You moved him up one!
I mean, I have him down for 150 innings on the season, and he's already at like 90, so.
Ryan Weathers is 133 for the season. Jared Jones at 90. I mean, okay, fine, because of that. Look, Max Meyer, I think, is throwing the best four-seamer of his life. He's in the best groove of his life. He's just killing it right now. And even though that Reed Detmers did look better in the last start, at the very least, I would say Max Meyer above Reed Detmers, just because Max Meyer has all three pieces, the four-seamer that's elite now, the two-slider, and super breaker combo. I'm a huge fan, but I also,
interestingly, has a lower Sierra.
Okay. All right. Sierra's whatever. I'm also trying to really bring back Zach Gallen. I'm drinking at my Gallen Gals today because please just be good for a moment again. That'd be really nice for all of us. But the more interesting one actually than Max Meyer.
Hey, you can appear sort of metaphysically on the pod tomorrow. What would you tell Zach Gallen?
Oh,
how would you fix Zach Gallen? Because we're doing a little Diamondbacks thing on the Rates and Barrels tomorrow.
Well, I'll make it quick. I just think it should be the old Zach Gallen of low four seamers with curveballs underneath as much as possible, and then everything low. That's what he used to do.
So fewer pitches, two pitches.
Well, I mean, focus on that. Obviously, the changeup as much as you can. The slider cutter has always been like, what are we doing? But really leaning into low four seamer called strikes as much as possible. It's honestly what I just saw Trey Savage do. And if you watch my morning streams, you'll see me do some ridiculous diagrams at times. And one of them was outlining why I believe that Trey Savage should throw low four seamers instead of high four seamers. And it's the same idea as Gallen, as why Gallen had success for so long, because he has the steepest splitter in baseball, Trey Savage. And he has such a steep attack angle that so many guys are not going to be able to identify if that's a splitter or a four seamer. And he's going to soak up all the called strikes and then get more whiffs on the slider and splitter, because he did get a lot of slider whiffs when he did go with a low four seamer in his last game.
Just to play devil's advocate here for a second, don't you have to throw a few high four seamers because the low curveballs, or at least higher, the low curveballs will look like, you know what I'm saying? To tunnel, sure, with a curveball that shows up low, like a low fastball doesn't tunnel with a low curveball.
Do you remember Jeff Passan's article during the World Series where it was Rangers and Diamondbacks about a pitcher throwing a death ball?
Yeah.
It was Jordan Montgomery, right?
Yeah.
He was wrong. Normally I'll say Jeff Passan, you got it right. You got it wrong here, because Zach Gallen is the real death ball. Okay. And that pitch, it does not have
Fairbanks.
the normal hump that you see. It really does look like it's coming straight, and then
so not. You can throw a low four seam with a low curveball that's sort of below the zone,
right? So the curveball does not land in the zone.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the highest O swing curveball, I believe, the lowest zone rate. It's something ridiculous like this.
So he should get more swings on the curve with your approach.
Yes, I believe he had an 80% low lock on his curve for multiple years.
If they guess right, though, and hit a low four seam.
It's true.
Maybe it won't be a homer. Maybe it'll just be a double.
Hopefully not, right? I mean, you're going to lean into more of the golfing swing guys in the process. But when I think about the trajectory of Gallen's career, I remember there was a year he finally started to try to do the Blake Snell blueprint. And he tried to actually really expand the four seam, and it didn't work for a while. And that is when I think it all kind of shifted for him, is he never really quite got back into that groove. I'm not saying this is going to be perfect, Zach Gallen. I really don't think it will, but I think it is a better approach that has worked for him in the past.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say. I mean, keep with the change up low too. That's the same idea. That should still work. Just everything, just do the neck beard. Do the neck beard. Right, which is not being inside the zone and just living around the edges on the left and right.
Elvis Andrews.
Well, it's named after Dallas Keuchel.
Oh, okay, Dallas Keuchel.
Who did exactly this, right? Yeah, he just threw changeups and breaking balls and sinkers.
And yeah, he was low all the time. He was just low.
And on the sides a little bit too, but never, you know, never the
Keuchel had pretty amazing command. Do you think? I mean, maybe Gallen has.
Gallen has. Yeah. So that's what I'd be leaning into for him. Now, someone else here inside the same range, because by the way, you had Meyer at 44 and Reed Demers at 43. I want to talk to you about Gage Jump, because when we first talked about him, you weren't as impressed as clearly as you are now at 41. And to me, the biggest change of my perspective or my assessment of Gage has been, hey, there's a ton of strikes. 75% strikes in the four seamer, about 70% on the slider. After being a little bit of a control problem in the minors, he's constantly landed the four seamer in the zone or competitively. And even though the secondaries haven't quite caught up yet, it's been productive thus far. You seem high on him as well at 41. I don't even know if Gage Jump is that high for me. He's right around there. Where are you seeing him now?
Well, it's a story about elevation. So Gage Jump in AAA had a poor IVB. He had
PCL?
Las Vegas.
Yeah. Okay.
So he had an 88 stuff plus on his four seamer, and he had, I don't have the raw IVB numbers in front of me, but if you do, please supplement these facts. But I believe his IVB has jumped by 2 or 3 inches in the big leagues. And I think it's almost all due to elevation. And what's funny is the Las Vegas park they played in, I didn't even know this until I was just talking to Zach Gelof yesterday. The Las Vegas park they played in was 1,000 feet higher than the Las Vegas park they will play in.
Okay. So, but are we talking like 6,000 feet to 5,000 feet? Or are we talking
It's still high. But neither of them is, Coors is 5,000 feet. Neither of them, I think it's sort of like 3,000 feet to 2,000 feet.
Okay.
So it's not going to be, A, it's not going to be Coors. B, it's not even going to be the current Las Vegas. So if you're talking about long-term concerns. And C, just right now in Sacramento, he's going to have better IVB. He has a better fastball than I expected, basically.
Yeah.
And this fastball aligns with what scouting grade said. They always said he had a good fastball. He acted like he had a good fastball and when he pitched, and now the numbers back him up and say, yes, it's a good fastball. That was just a quirk of the altitude.
So
something that we could always talk about, like, should you actually altitude adjust your stuff plus? It depends on what you want it to do. Do you want it to tell you what that stuff, like, his stuff is worse in Las Vegas and in Denver because stuff is worse there.
Yeah. You know what I mean? This is what I was going to ask was, are you treating stuff plus like, hey, if they're in a neutral environment?
Right. We aren't right now. Okay.
I don't know if PLV is. I got to ask Kyle Bland about that.
There's reasons either way, but I think there could be something called like a context neutral stuff plus. You could maybe make something that was like, because if you're linking to results, like why some part of the reason why Coors has worse results on balls in play is because stuff is worse there.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So you can't just like inflate everybody's stuff that's in Coors.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because then it won't link up to results.
Well, okay. Well, then the results you should. I would say
we do use Xwoba in our results, so we do wash our results. So it's not just actual results; it's expected results. But even in Denver, your expected results will be bigger.
Right. So I mean, you still have an understanding of like, okay, cool, this is your stuff plus, but it's this in these games, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can do away stuff plus for Coors pitchers if you're interested. Like, that's a split you can do on Fangraphs. It's an idea you can do. You could have we have context neutral projections. So, like Jordan Rosenblum, when he does Oopsie, he, in some of his projections, he has a park free projection. Sure. So, you can see what that person would be like in a neutral park. So, you could theoretically do something like that. And a stuff plus, it might be different than stuff plus. It may have to have a different name. It may have to have a sort of a different concept behind it.
Now, I believe those park-free projections started when Chan Ho was removed from the Dodgers, and that is a wonderful joke, and thank you so much. I think that it is actually really helpful, especially for the minor leaguers, to understand, because this is what we are grabbing their ability from, is just like, all right, their fastball, is it good or bad? And to say, hey, cool, they're doing it at this place and have that.
Right. It seems like maybe more important to do it for minor leaguers.
Yeah.
Like a predictive stuff plus, or just a context neutral stuff, a stuff plus plus. I don't know what to call it. You
know? That's just a hashtag. It's two pluses. It makes a hashtag, guys. So I'm also really curious.
Going forward, though, like how much do you
ding, I love
ding jump. Yeah.
I love
it. You got a ding jump for the park, though, still.
You do, but he's also has some success with it.
Yeah.
And I just think he's a good pitcher. I just think that he's got a really good fastball foundation. He's throwing a ton of strikes in, or sorry, strikes with. The slider at 70% strikes is great. He has two, a sweeper and a curve. I think he's actually kind of moved away from the sweeper a little bit. And we haven't quite seen the changeup take off yet, but he's starting to throw it a little bit more. And then you become elite swatch territory, right? That could be really cool for Gage Jump if the changeup comes, which we do see, like Robbie Ray introducing it. And then we see Carlos Rodon introducing the changeup. And what happens a lot for these four-seamer breaker guys from the left side. One player, though, in the same state as Gage Jump, and I'll be honest with you, I confuse their pitchers all the time when I think of some random pitcher. It's a guy on the Angels. It's Jose Soriano. And you still have him at 29. And I could have sworn we talked about Soriano. We said, all right, we're really seeing 2025 Soriano now. That first month was the outlier. However, you have him in front of names like Carlos Rodon and Bryce Miller and Parker Messick. And I want to hear a little bit more about that.
We just on Rates and Barrels covered this today. Jose Soriano.
Oh, well, then the already listen to that. Listen to that podcast.
Biggest stuff plus loser between April and June among pitchers that have, I think it's 20 innings in both. Starting pitchers that have 20 innings in both.
Yeah.
We decided that I had him too high.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Where should he be? Like a 45?
I think where Ryan Weathers is, like, feels good. Like, mercurial, good upside, you know, some downside, some health risk, a lot of health risk for both.
Okay. So, for 15 teams, I think it's better because he does go deeper and he has that ceiling that you do need to chase. 12 team, it gets into that hipster territory of headache inducing pitchers stuffing the entire roster. And I think I have him closer to 50, something along those lines in that, because I believe in Framber Valdez, I believe in Ranjer Suarez, Sonny Gray, Emmett Sheehan, Nathan Eovaldi, et cetera, et cetera.
Sheehan is pretty mercurial himself. So
I agree with you. I'm kind of putting like Framber and Jose Soriano together. And there's Michael King in there too. But there is one thing that I found very interesting in here, that you have Tanner Bibee at 50. And this goes into something that we were going to talk about, which is the Cleveland Guardians pitchers. Eno did this wonderful thing where he looked up all of these pitchers with major pitch mix changes. And I said, Eno, you got to do one more search. Guardian sinkers. What did you find, Eno?
The Guardians have doubled their sinker usage since early in the season.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's as a team. So not surprising to find that two of the three biggest pitch mix changes comparing April to June are Joey Cantillo and Tanner Bibee. Now, Cantillo doesn't throw a sinker, so it's not the sinker thing, but
it's just so funny to me. Well, it's not his, it's just whatever.
No, it's not. So it's, I just wanted to get him in here. But Tanner Bibee has increased his sinker usage 21 percentage points.
Yeah.
It's mostly come from the fastball, the change in the curve. So, you know, he's definitely, I think, a backwards pitcher still. But the sinker, especially against right-handers, has really taken over his pitch mix, and he's become more of a sinker slider guy against righties.
Right. I still don't love it. I know that he's had a really good stretch. Jay Crumpler led with Tanner Bibee in the roundup, I think last weekend. And he found this. He was like, Nick, you got to, this is kind of wild. Like, you can't even track his good starts and bad starts with sinker usage. And I, you know, he didn't know what to make of it. He's like, I feel like I should be in on this, but like, it's also Tanner Bibee, and I don't know if this sinker is actually that great. And I mean, first of all, it's great. I didn't see that. And he pointed that out. I was like, oh man, all right. Then I sit down and go, well, what is the problem with Tanner Bibee? Right? Has it always been that his fastball is not very good? Or is it that he doesn't know where his secondaries are going all the time? And it's the latter to me. It's the fact that Tanner Bibee had a really good cutter and a changeup back in the day. It was a slider, then it turned to a cutter, and then he doesn't have the changeup, or maybe he has the changeup, he doesn't have the cutter. Where's that going to go?
That cutter is a slider. Look at it.
From a slider to a cutter where like it dropped like 2 miles per hour. You know, one of those changes where like it's the same, but it's not the same, but it's the same.
He kind of also has a bimodal distribution for the cutter, so it's still possible it's two pitches.
Right. I think that's what I'm talking about, is that the slider, like he leaned more into the more cuttery version, and then they like grouped them together. There's sometimes that Savant does these things, and actually we were talking about ways that we could make some fun automations, and I'm trying to think if there's a way I can quickly identify outlier pitch classifications and like flag them and change them quickly. But that's a story for another time. With Tanner Bibee, I definitely have him in that Soriano grouping of just, it's a 50-50 coin flip for me. I really don't feel that, okay, great, I have Tanner Bibee on my team. I know that I'm not going to be lower on my ratios now. I know that I'm going to have this throughout the year. No, it could easily be like a 4-2 ERA and a 125 whip with a 21%, 22% K rate the rest of the way. Like, that could easily be what you get. I feel like that's half of the possibility, right? If not a little bit more. So I'm still iffy on this. I know that he's also allowed three or fewer runs in all but one of his last eight games as well. But right now, Tanner Bibee has a 4.03 ERA and a 1.18 WHIP with a 24% K rate. And yeah, I see guys
good,
like,
I think.
Yeah,
pretty good. And I just want to put forward that I do think his four-seam fastball is bad. And the reason when I look at him, it's because he's a 57-degree arm angle, very over the top.
Yes.
And so even though he has okay IVB on it, it's totally expected. And everybody just sees that arm slot and thinks this guy is going to have, you know, 17 inches of ride. And he does. So what has happened with this sinker over the course of this year is he's added 5 inches of drop to the sinker since the beginning of the year.
Ooh.
So now you're talking about a sinker that has not JT Ginn, who's actually a similar arm angle. It's not Clay Holmes, but it is like similar in that he gets a lot more drop than you'd expect given the arm angle. And so I don't know if they've dialed in something with Seam Sifted Wake, change some of their processes as a group. If Tanner Bibee's numbers are driving a lot of these team numbers, I mean, he is a starter who's throwing a lot more sinkers. Like, how much of the sinker usage change is just Tanner Bibee?
Yeah.
But it looks like the sinker is better, you know, true talent, and he's using it more. So, you know, I think that's the biggest source, honestly, for myself, because when I look at the scatter charts and the movement places for his breaking balls in the past, it doesn't look that different. I think I would say he has slightly above average breaking ball command.
So with Tanner Bibee, you mentioned that he has a lot more drop on his sinker, and he has increased it across the year, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first couple games are all above 11 vert, you know, and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, boom, the 25th arrives and it's 10 inches and then 9.8, then 8.7, 8.5, 9.5 on the drop of the vert and for a sinker. But that actually is what it was last year.
Yeah, I looked over at that and I was like, yeah, that's interesting. That's where it was.
Right.
But and I mean, so,
well, what happens in my view, though, is that is you actually had the four seamer at the beginning of the year gaining like 2-3 inches of verts up to like 18. And now that's fallen to like 16, and then he converted to the sinker. And this was reminding me of a time way back when of like the Pirates, where all of a sudden they all started throwing sliders a ton. 2017 or something like that, 2019.
Or when the Red Sox stopped throwing four seamers.
Right. And so we have Gavin Williams throwing all these sinkers all of a sudden.
He's right-handed. Throwing sinkers too. Yeah, that's right.
And that one, okay. This is a mini ramble, and I'm going to tell you all about Gavin Williams and a little bit more of the Guardians, and of course go over more of Eno's ranks after this break. So here's Gavin Williams. He's got this four-seamer. I'm like, that's the thing. That's the pitch, right? Everything else he can't throw strikes with, it's just that. Then this season, he's like, I can throw strikes with everything now. And he learns about the sinker. He probably gets some whisper in the ear. Hey, you should throw these sinkers. Okay. So he does it. And what bothers me is that, sure, you throw a sinker, it's going to work for like 2-3 games where guys are like, wait, you threw a sinker? Like, I'm not expecting this.
I didn't prepare for that. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But then what's supposed to happen is you throw both. You throw the four seam upstairs, you throw the sinker inside. This is how this works, is that now you have both and they have no idea. And we haven't gotten
just
quite
fallen
to that.
In love with the sinker, dude.
Right. He just so throws weird. It now. Except for his last start, which finally, oh my gosh, Gavin Williams in the meantime has increased his velocity on his four seamer, 97, 98 now. And he threw it at 7.4 feet of extension, which is just whoa. But he's still throwing more sinkers than four seamers. And I go,
what it used to be.
Oh, well, his
what it used to be extension.
Extension is he's gone from like 6'5 to 7 to 7'2.
Wow.
Like, all the way over the place. Like, and he's seeing 7.4. And with that velocity, we're actually doing this now.
I think so, in the end, he'll settle in at like 20% four seamers and 20% sinkers and like 15% cutters. Yet. Yeah, we're not there yet. Because if you look at the sinker and you look at it from the idea of the arm angle, his sinker is boring. It's like right on his arm angle.
Right.
It's
so
not,
he can't get away with that.
Yeah, it's not a great pitch.
No, but it's worked because they don't know
because of the four seamer, yeah.
Right? So then you eventually get that, and like, okay. And so I'm actually really into Gavin Williams like massively right now. I'm also really into Parker Messick. And by the way, you have Gavin at 21, and you have Messick at 35. And Messick yesterday, this is so funny to me, because Messick is so clearly a four seamer changeup guy. He came into this year. This is like, dude, I'm so good at nailing this four seamer upstairs. And got this change of down, whatever. He had like a little bit of turmoil for a second. And all of a sudden, I don't know, Mr. Mustache Twirling Sinker Boy shows up with his briefcase and pinstripe suit, whatever it is.
Hey, everybody, check out the new sinker.
Try out the sinker. The full one, you know, it has a two-seamer, but no, the sparkling sinker. And everyone just buys it. And so Messick starts throwing sinkers, and it works like a game. And then he started to lose like the feel of the four seamer with the changeup. And there was a game, I think, that just the sinker worked. And then all of a sudden, Parker says, I think my fastball's still good. And he ups it from like 94 to 96 in a game.
Yeah, the velo spike.
And then last night, he has 10 strikeouts or whatever it is with a 95 mile per hour four seamer. And the sinker's just like gone now from right handers again, where it's like four seamer and changeup and like a couple of sinkers. I'm like, thank you. He's one that's like, oh, cool. I see that water. I'm going to get out of the pool. You know, I'm good. Messick, I'm really, really into right now. As you mentioned, they have the velo up. It's exciting. It's so fun. It's just a funny trend to see that with a team. Be like, all right, we're all in on the sinker train. All right. You two can't see it. What? No, no. Okay, fine. You just throw curveballs instead. And hopefully that works. But all the rest of us dudes are going to do that. And so, I mean, I'm glad that it's working out there. You also have Slay Ciccone not really getting in on it, maybe a little bit, but he just did a weird thing of no cutters, which is like the best thing that he's been doing. And he just decided not to do that. I don't know.
I'm just glad. I'm glad to see this change wholeheartedly across all of them, because I did have this inkling of, like, you know, at times over the last couple of years, I've questioned whether or not we give them too much credit for developing pitching talent. And there's been times when Tanner Bibee didn't look good, Gavin Williams was hurt, Cantillo had no command, and you're like, you know, maybe the Guardians' magic touch when it comes to pitching is a little overrated. But then you see this and you're like, well, you know, in the pitch mix change thing, you know, to have two of the top three guys, that alone is interesting, because you're like, you're willing to make massive changes in season and just go for it. You have the confidence of your pitchers. Like, you have a connection with your pitchers, so you have a good relationship, and it seems like you're doing the right things. Joey Cantillo dialed down the fastball thing. We were worried about his cutter command. It's been good enough. You know, his command did suffer a little bit by throwing the fastball less, but with the cutter, it's been good enough to get to the breaking balls and to get to the changeup. So this version of Cantillo with, you know, a little bit more extension himself, I think, and slightly different specs on his changeup, and then this new cutter instead of so many fastballs, this has been a much better version of Cantillo too. So I think I have Cantillo a bit low. Messick was actually, I didn't have the two starts in a row with the big velo. I think I might have had that one start with interesting velo. So I think Messick was moving up late, you know.
You only had one. Yeah, the second one was yesterday.
Yeah, I was finishing it up, and I was like, I don't know. How much do I, like, believe in in one start?
But I mean, it was so cool. Like, whoa. Anytime I get that, I'm just, you know, honey. She's like, I'm going to bed. No, but seriously, like,
you gotta see this Tanner Bibee sinker.
Oh my gosh.
What if Ciccone did it too? Yeah, his sinker's up. Ciccone is sixth on our list. Really? Yeah. So they've really dialed in the changes. And Ciccone down 20 percentage points on the four seam and up 13 percentage points on the sinker, up 16 percentage points on the change.
Well, right, because the cutter thing? I don't understand. I don't understand at all. I was hoping someone would go to the next Slade Brigade meeting and ask about his cutter usage, because, like, that thing is so, that's his best pitch to me by far. Everything else is so whatever, and he doesn't have a good approach against the lefties. And it's like the cutter should just live always. And I think he threw two of them, or maybe four of them, in his last start. And I'm just going, why are you not doing this?
There was once an analyst I knew that declared that if you gave him average major league stuff, he'd be an ace. Well, I throw it on the gauntlet, played an ace, because not only is his stuff around average for a starter, but every one of his pitches is middling, just as you described it. 95 stuff plus four seamer, 95 stuff plus sinker, 89 on the cutter, 95 on the slider, 95 on the curve, 98 on the change. I mean, this is the definition of mid, but it is what happens when you add up lots of mid, you know what I mean? Like, what happens when you have five mid pitches? How good can you be? And Slade, you know, game to game, he's really interesting. I mean, I think he's a really good streamer is the best way I can do it. Cause I don't have a lot of confidence that he can continue it, but just to go and face Yankees two times in a row and have 11 innings with three earned runs.
Yeah. Well, that was three strikes. Okay. So that one, I remember writing about this where I thought he was going to change his approach, cause he showed up with a sinker and it worked. And I'm like, oh no, I remember it now. It was cutters and curves.
That's when he threw the most cutters. It was against the Yankees.
Aaron Civale approach with cutters and curves for like 60% of his pitches. And I was like, cool. You can't do that a second time.
And then he did.
Are you going to be able to do it again and like, or change something? And he did. And he pulled back on the curve.
Yeah, he threw a couple more times.
You just made me think, like, what do you get when you get a lot of mid? And all literally my head went to is like an Oreo of double stuff. It's like all the mids. You just keep stacking it. Which kind of makes me think of like the Arsenal. Yeah, the Arsenal, it's the double stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Welcome to my brain. I mean,
it does make him also like able to adapt to scouting reports better. Cause like he also had two good starts against Milwaukee and Houston in starts and consecutive starts. And his mix couldn't be more different from those two starts. And against Milwaukee, 23% cutters, against Houston, 5% cutters. 19% sinkers against Milwaukee, 39% against Houston.
That's what I'm getting at. It's like against Houston, a right-handed team where your cutter essentially acts as your slider. Why?
You don't throw it as much. Yeah.
Why? You have one strikeout. I wonder why. He threw sliders instead, the 84 mile per hour pitch, not the 89. And yeah, that is another. Okay, I gotta talk to you about this one. Maybe we'll prepare it for next time. But we have to talk about the 84 mile per hour gyro slider that is just taking over. There are so many pitchers that have this like gyro slider, I guess, with a little extra depth at 84 miles per hour.
Eliezer Hernandez, dude.
Yeah, but it's like, it's that with Kumar Rocker just getting 20 whiffs and a 46% CSW across five innings. Bryce Elder did it.
People identifying, identifying a part of, they're looking at like league-wide pitch mixes and velocities and stuff, and just, you could almost ask AI. I bet you if you ask AI, what's the most underrepresented but possible, you know, like, don't give me screwball. I get it. You know, yeah,
screwball exists now all of a sudden. Someone threw a screwball.
Yeah, some people are throwing it. But like, give me like, so that you can get rid of the screwball, but give me the five most underused movement profiles in the game.
Yeah.
I bet you it would have spit out at some point, hey, no one's really throwing a gyro slider at 80 miles an hour.
Oh my God. That just seems like a cement mixer slider.
And real slow out.
Someone else I'm going to throw into this, which to me is the most mind boggling, is Ben Brown's curveball that is a gyro slider. And it's at 86. And I'm just like, this is a 30% swing strike rate pitch, like every time.
Yeah.
I don't understand. And I know there's something I'm missing, and maybe exactly what you're talking about. They just don't expect this, but it blows my mind, you know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Also, by the way, I do want to mention Alan Rangel is throwing a screwball. And I think he's the only pitcher, at least starting pitcher I know of, that throws a screwball, because he is so high up on his release point. We're talking
Rangel. Right, yeah, because I would say Devin Williams is a screwball, and
not a changeup. He's just,
who else is a screwball? It's Honeywell, Devin Williams.
So with Devin Williams and Honeywell, I think they're throwing changeups, just ultra pronated, right?
I mean, just the movement profile looks like a screwball.
So the thing is that Ron Hells has the depth to be a screwball. Right, it's a curveball, but we just shoved it over at the velocity and everything. Because Rangel is actually, it's a reverse curveball, like it's actually positive horizontal movement.
Yeah, it's also because he's so extremely over the top. You see this sometimes. Smiley's curveball had arm side movement.
Did it really? Oh yeah. Man. So you guys know at home how you properly throw a screwball is you take a 12-6 curveball. So what you do is you cast it out and you throw it straight, your 12-6 from your head, nose to toes. And instead of the normal wrist, if you're the lefty or righty, you take your wrist and you become walk like an Egyptian. And then you throw it.
Ow.
Yeah, ow is the right term.
Ow.
Because what a screwball is just a curveball from the opposite arm.
Yeah, Dallas Brayton said he threw one, and the surgeon said that his shoulder looked worse than anybody's ever seen.
Oh no.
You're stopping me from doing it. I'm gonna do it. I'm giving myself flowers. Can I feel myself for a moment? Am I allowed to?
This phrase?
So in it's not anything gross. You never heard that? Anyway.
No, not the flowers part.
The feeling myself. Yeah, dude, I'm feeling myself. Check this out.
Go ahead.
AL labor is a 12-team AL only situation, right? Yes. So only American League pitchers, about as deep as you can go.
Right.
And, you know, in that auction, for example, I took all of the projections that were out there, and I did a composite projection for the hitters. And we go into this auction room, you're auctioning all the players, and every player was within $2-3 of my number, right? On the hitter side. And I said, well, you know, that makes sense to me, because I want to be near consensus. I don't want to overspend on somebody. I want to get the values. I want to grab the values, right? So I built a sort of a slightly above average offense. That's not where I'm taking my flowers. I just want to put that as a backdrop. Like, A, really smart people in the room that all have very similar numbers and have won all sorts of other accolades in their lives. And so it's a really fun room. On the pitching side, I said, I'm not going to do a composite. I'm doing Oopsie only.
Oh.
Because it has Stuff Plus in it. And I want to take an angle. You know, I want to just take an angle at pitching and boom or bust. You know, like, oh, here man. We go. Yeah, and fair. So in that league, I did make one mistake on the pitching side that I turned into an asset later. Griffin Jacks was my closer.
Oh. Wow.
It didn't work out.
I mean, then it did. So we're okay.
I drafted on that team. Let's see here. So still on my team because I made a bunch of trades.
Of course.
I drafted Dylan Cease.
Okay.
Will Warren, Carlos Rodon, Treya Savage.
Oh, no.
Reed Detmers.
Okay.
Yusei Kikuchi.
Oh, no.
And Ryan Weathers. Mm-hmm. And those are my regular starters. By the way, I only spent one third of my budget on pitching. So this was cheap as heck.
Yeah.
And my reserve rounds was Abel, Melton, and Ciccone. Okay. I don't know. I killed it, dude.
Yeah.
I traded Weathers and Jax for Aroldis Chapman. And I traded, who did I trade for? Munoz. I might have had one more good pitcher in there because I just traded for Munoz.
Well, too. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, Savage got hurt and then, or is delayed longer and hasn't quite been there, but looks like it's good now. CeCe missed out for a long time. Kikuchi, obviously.
Oh, but this is I have the best starting rotation.
Right. I mean, like Warren Ciccone in that kind of league.
I traded Reed Detmers for Andrés Muñoz.
Nice. Oh man.
So now I have Muñoz and Chapman and Cease and all those guys. I'm third in the league, but my pitching staff is pretty awesome. You know, I'm first in K's pretty obviously, and second in wins. And now that I've traded for two closers, I'm doing good. But I just thought that was a really good group of names because you have to think back. This is before the season started, right? So, you know, I thought I killed it. I thought that was a great.
I mean, in an AL only, those are all names that are like pretty much rosterable in normal 12 teamers. And the fact that those are 30 re-judge in an AL only is incredibly impressive.
Yeah. And that was my taking the Oopsie projection standpoint. So it was pretty good for my rankings too.
I'm going to tell you this, Eno. All right, this is what we're going to do, guys. We're going to talk about the industry leagues for a second. And there's only really, I mean, there's TGFBI, of course, but I actually pulled out of labor. And the only major one then for me that left is Tout Wars. And you guys, of course, might remember Alex Fast. If you're newer to the craft, Alex Fast, I joined Pitcherlist back in 2016. He's a starry-eyed actor from NYU. And he eventually became the VP of Pitcherlist and was in Tout Wars. And I think in the second year, he won Tout Wars, his league, and then he left to become only the director of content in MLB. And I haven't won Tout Wars. And it drives me up the wall.
I'm sure he's told you about it.
Oh, of course. So so this year, right now, it's a head-to-head 12-teamer, points league CBS. You might not believe this, you know. It's head-to-head, so I mean, however you do in the regular season, whatever. But how they do it is you have the person that week, and then you also have against the median, right? So for, you know, it's 12 weeks so far, but it's really 24. I am 21-3, you know.
Here we go.
Right? It's I can't believe it. Third place is 6 games back from me. Sky Dombrowski is second with 20-4. Fine. But this is my pitching staff, you know? And again, hi, I'm the guy who drafts so much hitting that I'm like, I'll figure this out. I'll stream whatever I need to do in a points league for CBS points, which is
was it
like
an auction how many innings or was it get. Auction. A draft.
Oh, wait. You might be able to go on Twitter and see me draft this team. Do you not know the story of me drafting Tout Wars? Oh my gosh. You know, I had a day where I had to go to the Upper West Side in Manhattan and go back to New York, which is like an hour plus train ride each way. And then I had to go coach my basketball finals.
And I also had to take a radio spot for MLB Network like right before the final started. And I had the draft start at 10 and I had to be back in New York in like Brooklyn at like 12:30. I also had to print out my rankings so I can have Doug Dennis finish my draft for me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, my printer broke. So then I had to go find a Staples nearby and the, how I could print out the Google sheet. So it was like,
this is the team, this team you drafted in those circumstances?
I didn't have a computer. So there I am. Everybody's there with their laptops. I'm late. I already missed like the first like five picks or whatever it is. And I'm in a suit because I'm drafting for my, I'm going to be coaching my basketball finals after this. And I just have a piece of paper.
And you're like, is Bobby
I'm,
like,
I'm gonna do it. I'll be fine. I have my phone and a piece of paper and these things. And this is, and I'm in first place. Y'all help. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You hear that?
When did so that. it was a round by round draft? When did you take your first
pitch? It was, I mean, a straight auction draft.
Oh man, you did it.
So, like, I just missed like whoever that? Went the first five. I was like, oh, I'm not my team.
Wow. But your sheet at least had values on it. You had some numbers.
It did have values that I had to squint and figure out. And Doug Dennis eventually like couldn't read it. And I just said, like, I gave him like quick notes, be like, draft Tobies. I got my hitters done, figure this thing out for like one more guy or whatever it is, but just draft Tobies. But this is the staff that I have now. And it's my main guys, Tyler Glasnow, Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher. Chase nice. Burns in the RP spot.
Oh.
And Cam Schlittler.
Nice. Wait, so you punted saves.
What as far as like the hitters and everything?
Oh, is it head to head or?
No, it's head to head.
So you punted saves?
Oh, completely. You don't need saves, do not matter.
Yeah.
Because it's points.
Yeah.
So oh, I have points. Sean Burke and Troy Melton in my RP spots right now that I picked up. Chase Burns, and also, oh yeah, Davis Martin picked up that one. I also have Will Warren and Michael Wacha's run with me there. Like, this has been such an oh yeah, Michael Soroka was my RP slot for ages too.
Nice.
And meanwhile, I've got Ben Rice and Bryce Harper and Nick Kurtz. Yeah. And guys, just use Process Plus, just use Pitcher List PLB projections, and Oopsie if you want to. I'm sure it's great. But I just use this. Oh man. I there you go. There are my flowers, and I'm not gonna win this league because it's only June 24th. Okay.
Oh no, it's in the bag. Hey, I got things for you on the changer list that are interesting.
Oh, we've man. Disagreed okay, so... on
Robbie Ray in the past. Robbie Ray has joined the sinker revolution, dropped 16 points on his four seam and added sinkers. Is this a good thing?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Eno, after you guys all fast forward us talking about our fantasy leagues after this break. Right. So Robbie Ray, you remember he did this before? This is like the second time, because when he went from the Jays to the Mariners.
Yes, that's right. He did.
And then he started throwing sinkers. But one of the funniest things to me, this is the same year he threw a sinker to Yordan Alvarez, by the way.
The bad one. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a rare time he threw it to a lefty. He only threw them to righties and away. And it's like, that's not normally what you see, right? Robbie Ray, I don't know if I believe that he's going to keep throwing these sinkers. It's been such a wild journey of him trying to go from nothing. Like, fastballs were low, you know. He threw low fastballs for a few games. We're like, you're not trying to do that. You had no slider. You had no changeup. This is what it was so bad. Everything was terrible. And then finally slowly getting the four seamer back up against right-handers. And just in his last start, did he have some good sliders? The one constant has been Robbie Ray's change up to righties all of a sudden. Like, that has been the back pocket, I've got it, no problem pitch somehow. And yesterday's game, finally we saw the slider work in there as well. We've seen some of those sinkers, as you just mentioned.
But it's not.
I don't really think that's the savior, though. I think it's really just.
It's not a really good pitch. And if he's throwing that a lot, it has the same movement as his sinker.
The changeup?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the sinker, I think, is just kind of like, okay, I need something else. Please help me. And the changeup, though, I think is a solid addition against right-handers. He keeps it down and away consistently to them.
It like, all I think seems this has been really desperate helpful. To me, dude. It just seems like it seems like this, like, you know, because we've talked about, me and him talked about, like, the fastball is his best pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he's now throwing it less than 30% of the time, it does not sound good to me.
I think he wants to do. He's not quite, like, he was throwing it too high now, right? He hasn't found that, the red mohawk, right, over the middle of the plate look quite
You're
yet.
Right. His location on his fastball has been bad all year. He's had like two or three good games with it.
Yeah, it's been rough lately. So I think that's the biggest issue at the moment for Robbie Ray and that he needs to get back to. But, like, I think it's progress being made. I'm not telling you that's totally back. I am curious where you did put Nolan McClain on your rankings. And you have McClain at 18. This was one game of getting back on the bump, right? It was a seven inning, nine strikeout game, I believe, against the Reds that you saw. Maybe you hadn't even seen it yet, because McClain had suddenly kind of lost his wider arsenal and was becoming so focused on the sinker, was not really nailing it on the sweeper, didn't have much of a supporting cast working for him for a couple games. And you still felt confident at 18 with him. Or were you just kind of throwing away the recent struggles that he had, or were you seeing something underneath all of it that was like, oh, this is fine?
To me, I think it's, you know, I was just talking to JT Ginn about, you know, why the Triforce works, why the three fastball thing works.
Rat pack. Yes.
Yeah. And he was saying that, you know, first of all, it's just easier. It's the pitches you've thrown the most in your life. Mm-hmm. And he had said they're smaller movement patterns, so they're easier to control. And that's not something we never heard before, but I think it is really relevant to McClain, because his best pitches are these pitches with huge movement profiles. And then yeah. I think this is set against the backdrop of him not being a full-time pitcher for a long time.
Oh yeah.
So I just see, like, what I saw as like a temporary loss in command that I think will iron out over time. If you look at his location plus numbers in the slump, they were awful. 81, 88, just really bad, like future reliever type. But early in the season, he had 100s and 102. He had a 120.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
So I just saw it as like a temporary loss in command that didn't allow him to throw the curveball, because he couldn't get into counts where he felt like he could throw the curveball and maybe miss the zone. And so it put pressure on his worst pitches. And it was just, I just saw it as a temporary loss of control that eventually would iron out over time. Okay. I did not see the Cincinnati start, and I don't even know if I got that Atlanta start.
Well, the one against Cincinnati, I discredited a lot, because he got, I believe, five called strikeouts on a sinker that just didn't seem right. And yeah,
this is something that I've seen on the internet, is that swinging strikes predict strikeout rates better, and that called strikes are more finicky, and that he has had a ton of called strikes so far this year. But
oh yeah, completely.
There are pitchers that freeze, like, you know what pitches freeze batters a lot are big pitches. You know,
yeah, like the curveball, for example, they'll just not swing it. Yeah.
Like the curveball. So you might get a lot of called strikes on the curveball, and he might get called strikes on the sinker if they think it's the curve. You know what I mean? Like
You know,
there are ways to manipulate called strikes.
I've never said this phrase before in my life, if you can believe it, but you're talking to the guy who invented CSW.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know about the whole thing was that, like, we're not rating called strikes enough.
Yeah.
It was Aaron Nola was the reason why for that. And that was like the called strikes that he would get constantly with the sinker, or not getting valued enough. Right. So I am with you on the, it is interesting that if you can make that a skill, look at Sonny Gray having a 40% put away rate on his sinker in 2024. I think it was on, like, you could just get all these strikeouts on sinkers backdooring right-handers all the time. Right. And that can be sticky. It's just about, you know, there's certain guys that have that skill. That's just what that is. And some guys don't. I don't know if Nolan McClain does, right, when it comes to a backdoor sinker to right-handers. I also think that I remember last year, a lot of his sweeper success was called strikes against right-handers. And it felt like kind of weird of just, this should be the big whiff pitch, not the freezing one, right? And I think that's changed a little bit this year. It's not been as much of a called strike pitch, more of that swing strike one.
But if you,
but I am
in agreement with you, though. To make the most out of your swing strikes is to have a dominant out pitch. So then, that, like, when you get to two strikes, you have a way to get to three strikes.
Yes.
Reliably.
Yeah.
I don't know. He had in the minors a lot of really high strikeout rates with 11 and 10% swinging strike rates. He had 48 innings last year. We had a 10.9% swinging strike rate and a 30% strikeout rate. So like we have 131 innings now of a 29% strikeout rate with a 10% swinging strike.
That's so wild to me. I feel like that's such an anomaly. That really is not a common thing. I would think the biggest one I could think of really is Aaron Nola at the top of my head of having that kind of disparaging amount. And sometimes it's you only get swing strike rates in two strike counts, right? Sometimes that could be like if you have a super high overall put away rate, that is when you get to two strikes on a batter, how efficient
are you? Throw the curveball, right? You know? Then he can throw the dominant curveball. I don't know. Yeah. And then I guess lastly, it's just, you know, I do hew close to my projections. It's a really nice projection. And the projection, for what it's worth, only has 24.6% strikeout rate in it. Mm. So it's still a nice 351 ERA projection. Where I still struggle is I don't look enough at whip. So, you know, projected whip. And, you know, if you do look at McLain versus the people around him, he has the worst projected whip of he's 18. And the to get a worse projected whip, you have to go to Jose Soriano, 29, who we just decided should be lower.
That's interesting. So Cease doesn't have a worse projected whip.
Who?
Dylan Cease.
No. 119 for him, for these removes.
Okay.
The other person you'd have to go down to, you'd have to go down to Parker Messick and Treya Savage at 35 and 36. So it's possible I have Nolan McLain too high given that whip. But I default a lot of times to just being a stuffist and being like, this is really good stuff, I think. And
okay. So,
right. You know, if you're going to use one number out of all the results, you know, K percentage gets you almost all the way there. Out of K minus BB, right? Like,
yeah,
alone gets you almost all the way there.
I do want to mention to you, I think I'd be such a disservice if I didn't point out that Enoceris right here, Enoceris at 91 and 92 are Troy Melton and Justin Wroblewski. And let me say, at 90 is Trevor McDonald. And I thought you really did not like Trevor McDonald. But you do not like Troy Melton and Justin Wroblewski. And then there's Wilbert Urania, who's just been, he's made it work.
Yeah. Remember what I just said about K percentage? Those three have the worst projected K percentage. There's nobody who has a worse K projection ahead of them other than Bryce Elder, Andrew Alvarez.
So why are they higher?
And Michael Wacha. Now, Michael Wacha is up there because I don't know what devil he made.
Yeah, Wacha, the
devil.
It's a kitchen sink devil.
Yeah.
And I can just see him with the apron washing the dishes.
Bryce Elder is just the market bullying me into thinking he should be a top 80 pitcher. I don't have projections that say he should be. I don't know why.
His Sierra, 80 mile per hour slider. That's it.
Elder had like has a 422 Sierra. I don't know. I was like, he might be an okay pitcher. Like I put him next to Andrew Alvarez. I was like, these guys might be okay. So really Elder and Alvarez could maybe be lower and some of those guys could be higher, but it's just the when you get projected. Oh, and then the other thing I did a piece of research where I just looked at K percentage. I said, how many people with under a 20% strikeout rate have been fantasy valuable. And so I found 124 pitchers that had a K percentage under 20% and had a certain amount of innings. I forget what it was, 100, 150, whatever it is, right? And over the last 3 years. Of those 124 pitchers with a 20% strikeout rate or worse, one was a top 15 pitcher. I wonder if you could guess.
He's a lefty. Was it like a ridiculous Merrill Kelly season or something like that?
That's a really good guess. He was a lefty, though.
Oh, he was a lefty. Oh, I know Christopher Sanchez had like a 19.8 one year, but no, that wasn't the year when he was top 15.
Perennially under 20%. In fact, he's the best under 20% guy because he has two other seasons in the top 75. He's the only guy with three top 75 seasons under 20%.
Ranjer Suarez or no?
Tyler Anderson.
Oh, my gosh.
You forgot him because it doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. I forgot. I thought there was someone who's actually like starting now.
Yeah. But anyway, so he's the only one who's top 15. He's the only one who has showed up on the list more than twice. If you want, so basically it's this: if you want to be a top 15 pitcher with a top 20%, with a less than 20% strikeout rate, you're a 1 in 124 shot. If you want to be top 50, you're like a 1 in 30 shot. And if you want to be top 100, you're like a 1 in 5 shot.
So here's the thing, you know, that you're forgetting. I've got you. I've got it, guys. You ready? You ready to get the awards for nothing? This is not, there's no award. There isn't anything.
The Nick Martinez Award?
Oh, gosh. Well, this is under one assumption that I don't agree with. That Troy Melton and Justin Robleski will continue to be a sub 20% striker.
Yeah, I mean, Troy Melton has a 20.7% projection. So
he's already beaten it, you know?
Robleski only has a 19.4.
So I Robleski started the season with like nothing, and the last like six has been like an 18%. I know that is not a great endorsement.
Well, I got yelled at the most for Robleski this time. Someone told me to watch baseball.
Oh, you know what? That might be smart. You know, imagine, you know, you've never done that.
Baseball? Should I have? Listen, there are like only three things that are ever on my TV, ever.
Football,
baseball, World Cup, and those stupid Survivor shows, mostly during the winter. Like
hold on a second. When you say stupid Survivor shows, there's Survivor and then there's stupid reality shows.
No, Alone or Naked and Afraid.
Oh, you mean like not the show Survivor?
Survival. Yeah, the survival shows. I don't know why. You know, I don't have to pay attention to them. I look up and I'm like, God, you guys look like you're having a terrible time. I'm people here in my house.
Wow. So that's actually why a lot of people like reality shows, because like they feel better than the people that they're watching.
I think
now the funny thing is you're saying that about survival. I cannot stand the reality shows of just these people talking as if like we should give them our attention and this stuff.
Oh my God. Like,
you know, big, like, podcasters, like, how do you, you know, we're talking
Long Island or whatever. Oh God.
Oh gosh. It drives me up the wall, but this is what my wife says. She puts those on and then it's like fluff in the background that she doesn't actually pay attention
to. She's looking at her phone. She's doing other things.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, she's working or whatever. And I'm like, people are talking. I have to listen.
That's right. I don't like, the talking on those survival shows is always, and then I'm making a trap and I don't care, you know? So I'm like, whatever.
Oh my God. But anyway, so Robleski, you don't watch clearly because you don't watch baseball. So
I mean, he's an elite strike thrower. I get it. I just don't know that any one of his pitches, and I just watched him again yesterday. And I was like, why don't any of you guys hit these pitches harder?
This is how we felt with Bryce Elder, but he's better than Bryce Elder in my view.
He is better than Bryce Elder,
but you don't have that in your rankings.
I know. I think that for sure. Now, I mean, Bryce Elder has put together, I think, two stinkers since those rankings came out.
I mean, it's one was enough for me. I'm just kidding.
And Bryce Elder's strikeout minus walk rate, it was better than Robleski's. So it's
I understand what it has been.
Yeah.
Sorry, I meant to say that as a joke, and then I was like, wait, I'm actually going to say a real sentence now. I'm like,
are you buying the like the splitter? I mean, that's a splitter he's throwing, a lefty, the rare lefty splitter. Yeah,
no, I mean, what I am buying is the fact that Robleski last year was a six pitch guy, and then he's condensed it to four seamer and slider, has upped the velocity of the four seamer recently, is continuing with good location on both. And is a part of the Dodgers. It is good. He's getting wins. He's going longer into games.
Probably get good pitching coaching.
So I'm fine with that. Well, Troy Melton finally got some strikeouts, and I feel like his location he's a really good commander. And I've realized that that's not anything we ever say. He commands well, and he
locates well. He debuted, which is annoying to me, but what I just have to refocus. Melton for me now is a six pitch pitcher with command.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a wide mix.
And what I think with better stuff than we normally see from a kitchen sink guy.
Yeah, he still has a fair amount of upside.
I actually say this in every preseason. I probably will again next year for Troy Melton. I think the best targets for everyone. I mean, we really talked about this in September last year, where we found that last year, the biggest hits you could have made around your draft or right after it were the guys who were volume arms who then kept those ratios throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the best plays that you can make in your drafts are getting those volume arms who have the ability to do more. So you're already happy with where they are and there's room for growth, as opposed to getting guys who you are hoping repeats it, but then could get worse. So,
or getting especially injury prone guys, because I mean, if you're spot sure. like draft and hold and stuff, it's just, do you have a, you buy three injury prone guys and you're like, oh, they'll be great. And then they're all injured.
Right. I call this though, the Christopher Sanchez, the Alcantara, the Wheeler rule of those, when those guys had their breakout seasons, there were situations where you were like, this is a great floor and we're really happy with it. And the draft spot is great. It's like, you don't need to do anything different, you know, but there's also room for to do more. And I see Troy Melton as someone that I'm not going to say for next year or the year after that he's just going to be a 20% strikeout rate guy.
So for this year, I think some similar names, stop me when you think I'm wrong, but maybe Cease, Rasmussen, Joe Ryan, you know, maybe that's too high. Maybe we're talking about who's a little bit lower. I guess Will Warren is kind of an interesting.
That is the kind of realm. Think of it like good Ryan Nelson or, you know, that kind of way. Good
Gavin Williams. Gavin Williams was 44 on my rankings going into the season.
Oh, you know, you're talking about the ones who had the volume going into this, not what Troy Melton should become. I apologize. Right.
Yeah.
So Drew Rasmussen, I think, is actually a really good call with that. Because we were worried, some were Kona worried about him being limited, but it was clear that the Rays were letting him go at this point. And he,
I generally agree that, like, you know, it's good to have some backbone to the player to, like, you know, this, you know, he's able to throw 100. But I will say that some of the line of thinking that you're giving right now is why I have a lot of Matthew Liberatore.
Sure.
Because I thought, He's got a place to rotation.
What was the price for him?
It was like an eighth starting pitcher in a 15 team league.
Right, exactly. That's okay with me. I'm like that at that point. If you get any value from that, you're happy.
And I guess as a miss, it's not that bad because I'm still slotting him in at home sometimes and against weaker opponents, and it's still okay.
But other ones that I would say have been productive, like Landon Roop, just despite, you know, the things that he's done. Mm-hmm. His command has been great, and like he's has the volume, has the runway. I would say Parker Messick is along this line, right? I think as you brought up, I would put, let's see. I think of next year, Connelly Early will be in the same spot that I have Troy Melton. Of just like, you have the runway. I think that you're going to be better than this, but if you just do what we expect of you, you should be productive.
Still be useful, yeah.
Right? That's where my head is with a lot of this. Cam Schlittler was one of them. You know, Cam was like, okay, if you just, you know, you don't have to take another leap, but you are probably not going to be a bad ERA, bad whip guy.
And, dude, the hype seven that we talked about going into the season, they've been great.
Well, not all of them.
Who not?
I mean, Kane Horton got hurt. Trey Savage has not really come through with it.
Well, Kane Horton wasn't in the hype seven.
No, he wasn't. You want to include him in it?
The hype seven was Cam Schlittler, Chase Burns, Jacob Mizorowski, Nolan McLean. Oh, Yuri Perez is the
Yuri Perez is the other one. Yeah, that's the one I was. That is actually was a good example of, like, you're not going to get worse, and he got worse.
Emmett Sheehan. Emmett Sheehan and Yuri Perez. Emmett Sheehan's in there too.
Emmett Sheehan, where are you on Emmett Sheehan? You have him at 40. I get this question all the time of, like, what? How should we feel about him?
He's gained stuff plus. Like,
well, he's up a little bit, yeah.
It's I think it's like a platoon split question.
Oh,
I think it's that his changeup is his best pitch and he doesn't want to throw it right on right. I'm not sure of that anymore.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I would not be surprised by that.
What are we doing here against Baltimore? What was the problem against Baltimore? Threw the changeup 9.8% of the time. Isn't that one of your better pitches?
Yeah.
Let me see. That was a bad game. Let me see if there's bad games tracked that way. Against the Padres, that was a pretty bad game.
5-19. I mean, he hasn't had a game above 20% usage. He's only had two of them all year. 35% on the first day of the year, and then I May 8th at 22%. That's it.
And everything is really, it's the slider a ton. And the slider's, I mean, the slider's not bad, and I get why he throws it, but Stuff Plus doesn't think the slider's that great.
Hmm.
So I would do some right on right changeups, man. That's my solution for Amichian. I don't know if it's a good one, but
it sounds good to me. And the last one I'm going to say to close this out, guys, is Bryce Miller at 32 is another example of before the injury stuff, but like Bryce Miller, he should be fine, and then there's upside for more. I am amazed that you have him as low as 32 because I think he's absolutely awesome. I think he's going to be in the top 15 for me in like the next couple.
It's a great, great velo. It was right in the middle of the, you know, the whole piggybacking conversation.
Okay. Eno, I got to talk about the piggyback thing. All right. Are you weighting the piggyback stuff at all in these rankings?
A little bit. Yeah.
How so?
I think every Mariner dropped a little.
Okay. So do you know what I say about six-man rotations?
I just dropped a little bit of innings pitched off of all of them. I mean, it's going to cost some of them wins.
So do you know what I say about six-man rotations at the beginning of seasons?
Yeah,
called the Lord of the Rings rule. It's six-man rotations are like the Fellowship of the Ring. It starts off with a lot of people and grand ambitions and ends with two dudes barely surviving.
Yeah.
Okay. This should be treated like that because the Mariners have been blessed.
So how does it resolve?
Well, how does it resolve? How every single six man or every single injury. Rotation, someone is going to get hurt. And if you look at this entire rotation from opening day and Bryce Miller was hurt and came back, no one's gotten hurt. Nothing has been disrupted.
Do you think George Kirby should be much lower than 24?
Yes.
Hmm.
I do. I think George Kirby, we actually put out a really cool Kirby thing. I messaged, I'm not getting off this tangent for a second. Hold on. Let me get the point. Is that this piggyback is, I don't think Bryce Miller is going to get piggybacked again. So I think by the time it comes back around to him, something will have happened. It's how it works. We were even talking about like, oh, Troy Melton's going to be out of this rotation or Keenan Montero. Then all of a sudden, nope, Verlander's hurt again. And nope, there goes Flaherty. Okay, well, never mind. Oh, Ryan Weathers is going to move to the pen when Rodon and Cole are back. Nope, Max Gray and Luis Teal. Like, this is always the conversation that happens.
I have not docked the Yankees in anticipation of anything. It's true.
And it's like, this is a better one. Because when they throw... you don't even know which one's going to have the better win chance. Like they're still getting four innings in that missed start, right? Like it's like 2-3 innings off of a start. That's all it is. And they're not even doing six man. It's better for the others because they're not going 6 days. They're going the normal 5-day rest or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also using six man as a proxy for like, someone's going to lose out. And then whether it's injury, I mean, Bryce Miller is the biggest injury risk of the group.
But he's the one who's thrown the least. And I don't know if that's even true at this point. Because I mean, he still has
loose bodies in his elbow.
With his flexor injury last year, you've had shoulder stuff with Kirby. You've had Brian Wu have whatever he's gone through.
Miller has loose elbows in his elbow right now. They didn't take him out.
Forgot about that.
They didn't take him out.
But he's pitching so well, you know.
I know.
It's like the best stuff of his career. He finally has learned secondaries.
I think a lot of times
they'll do at the end of the year.
I think a lot of times the guys that you're like, you know, how do you have them this low? I'm like, they're going to get injured.
don't do that.
I mean, it's rude and it sucks and I don't want to say it, but on some level I have to bake it in.
Oh, I know. I'm just trying to get rid of you. Because you put Ben Brown 39 that he's hurt right now.
I know. Oh God. And I didn't want to. I was trying to keep him down because I was like, I don't know how many innings he has in him this year.
I don't know that he's actually
finally move him up and he's hurt.
Yeah. But I do want to say last thing here is that we have a last week I messaged Kyle Bland in the whole full-time staff and said, guys, do we have a data viz that shows how much pitches move relative to a baseball bat? Like actually just using a baseball bat and then the expected movement off of it. just so you can get a good visualization of like everybody's getting confused with the pitch movement plot, even though we see it like Cypher from the Matrix. We're like, oh, brunette, whatever. There's a slider. That's a good one. That's a bad one. Everyone else goes, I can't read this thing. I'm like, all right, let's just stick a baseball bat. And we can say this pitch is generally missing above it or below it relative to where the normal swing would be on it. And what we made out of that is by using the swing miss distance from Savant, we've now have this wonderful data viz of like you throw these pitches, where are batters missing above, below, on it? Is it they're not missing? And George Kirby's sweeper, I tweeted out. You can probably go find it right now if you saw it. Oh my gosh. It is just right-handers are just barreling it all the time.
It does look like some of it's off the end a little bit.
It's slightly up, sure.
But there's a lot of bad on it.
It should not be anywhere. Like we compare it to other ones and it's just not even close. And
I think that's
something I've been yelling for ages. I know why, you know. I have my theory and it hasn't been disproven yet.
What's that?
They're laning him. He doesn't throw anything inside to righties.
Oh,
everything is away. They're just always just going to be swinging away.
Plus, I think he falls in love with, it's similar to laning. Like he loves the high four seamer above the zone as a swing and miss pitch, right?
He throws the sinkers there. He throws the sinkers like middle and middle away. And then the sweeper goes middle, middle away. And it's just, they're starting over here and then converging to the middle, essentially together, converging to the same spot. When instead, they should both start in the same place and then
go in. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, it's I don't get it. I truly don't understand that. And I know there's got to be some reasoning because it just keeps happening.
Almost everybody else in baseball throws sinkers inside to righties.
Right. And then sweepers away. It's what you do if you're a sinker sweeper guy, which actually in my heart, that's what Kirby is. He's more of that.
He doesn't have great movement on the four seam. Yeah.
It's a dead zone four seamer. I don't know. Once he does that, he'll be amazing. But for now, it's just like, he's okay. You know, and it's so frustrating to say that. So yeah, I have Kirby much lower than you at 24. I have him in like 40. I can't do this. But anyway, you know, it's been a while. It's been a while since we started this podcast. And just want to say thank you so much for being here today, being a wonderful guest. I got to get you out of here. What is the next thing we can expect from you on The Athletic?
I'm working two big stories, but it's hard, man. It's hard. Oh. They're not going anywhere. I'm calling an audible and calling other writers to come and help me on this one, on these two stories.
Can you give us any breadcrumb?
Well, one's about, they're both about implements.
Implements. So the next cyborg players are coming. That's implants, Nick. No. Implementing implants is what it is.
They're both about equipment, pieces of equipment.
Interesting. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. And I have actually a very interesting interview I'll share with you guys in 2 weeks or so with a retired pitcher, and I cannot wait for that. But that is it for today, everyone. On behalf of Eno Saris, this wonderful, wonderful guest, my name is Nick Pollock. We'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.